AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, what's cracking? Y'all know what to do. Another episode, Gangsta Chronicles, you bitch.
With his boy Big Steel in the house.
You know what it do, man. We back at y'all one more time. What's cracking?
Oh, man, just chilling, man. We got our special guest co-host in here banging out these top 50 gangster rap albums of all time. My boy, hip-hop journalist extraordinaire, Soren Baker.
Yes, thanks for having me, y'all.
I want to educate y'all a little bit, y'all youngins out there. You know, it's been a lot of positive feedback, Soren, since you've been on the show with us, you know, doing your thing. But if somebody to ask, who is the white guy on there? And I said, man, he's just one of the greatest minds in hip-hop, you know. He's been chronicling hip-hop for the last, how many years, Soren?
Almost 30 now.
30 years, man, before some of y'all was even born.
Yeah.
He was putting it down as an editor for The Source magazine, has written some of the most prolific articles in hip-hop, man, you not just The Source.
You know motherfuckers don't give a fuck about shit like that. They just like, who the fuck is the dude y'all got on there, man? Y'all got a host on like motherfucking, like you put your coins in and click the thing and get the prize in. Yeah. They like, so, you know, niggas don't be giving a fuck. They just be curious and want to be motherfucking commentators on what the hell.
Yeah, what's going on? But that's what it is, though, Soren. We actually glad to have you here, brother.
Thank you.
Congratulations, man. For those, if you haven't got it yet, go out and get his new book with Juicy J.
Yeah, man. Chronicles of the Juice Man, anywhere you buy books.
Yep. And he got a new album that's out. I don't know if it's really new now, but yeah, it's new. His latest album, make sure y'all go get that, Lessons Part 2.
Yep.
And we will get started with the show. So to start things off, man, you know I got to mention this, man. Special Ed. You know, my man went on Drink Champs and said that N.W.A. pretty much started the gay of society. They're responsible for the breakdown of society. And you know what's funny about him saying that, man, is that
Back, well, you got to get it right, man, because, you know, he going to come back and say, I didn't say the breakdown of society.
Pretty much.
He said, what did he say? The appetite of, they brought the appetite of destruction for our youth.
Yeah, they brought destruction to our youth. And I didn't have a problem with him choosing Wu-Tang. I love Wu-Tang Clan, too. I'm a Wu-Tang Clan fan, but don't get it twisted. Wu-Tang Clan was spitting gangster shit, but from an East Coast perspective. Raekwon, the chef, is talking about selling dope. Why you think they call him the chef? He ain't talking about the chef. He ain't talking about he's Raekwon, the chef. Because he's an excellent cook, he's Raekwon, the chef, because he know how to whip that work in that Pyrex bowl. He the chef. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know if people understand the demographics of what hip-hop was before we jumped off the porch with our contribution to hip-hop. If you go back as far as I go with hip-hop, hip-hop was, it was fresh, it was new, it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was rock the house type, you know, let's, you know, braggadocious, you
focus,
know.
Man,
they can hear me still. They got.
You don't be having to engineer this shit. I'll be having to turn your voice up. I just want to put the show out, though.
This motherfucking steel, man. This technical input ass steel. But, you know, motherfuckers didn't really. It wasn't really too much, I guess you want to say, hardcore aspect. Even though, you know, we had records like, you know, Grandmaster Flash with the message who, you know, spoke about the oppression at that time, you know, drug pushers and, you know, not being able to get a break and, you know, all that type of stuff, if you knew what was going on with black people in the 70s and whatever.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You saw movies like, you know, well, I did. You know, I saw movies like Warriors and shit like that. You know, the Sonny Carson movie. I saw movies like that growing up, Three the Hard Way, and a lot of black flicks, you know, which gave the element of the underworld, you get me? Before I heard a fucking rap record, right?
Right.
My participation in the gangbanging came from growing up in poverty. Everything was bright, you know. My parents, you know, father had a good job working at General Motors, and I grew up in South, you know, we had a house in, I want to say, Linwood area. When I was a kid, maybe about 4 years old, you know, everything was great. And, you know, but once my parents got divorced and we moved to Compton and I was around 6 years old, shit changed drastically. You get me? And still, I heard no, there was no fucking hip hop. You get me?
Mm-hmm, right.
I heard Teddy Pendergrass and my auntie played Millie Jackson and Bobby Blue Bland and shit like that. That's what I heard growing up. Ain't hear no fucking, you know, niggas, you know, talking about the police and whatever. I saw that firsthand because I grew up in a place called Spooktown. And I lived on Johnson Street, where at one end of the street they had the set called the CV70s. It was a Mexican gang. Mm-hmm. And then down the street, you know, they had the homies from Spooktown, Crip Gang. That's where I saw
my
influences of street life, as you want to say. None of them niggas was down the street rapping about what was going on. It was just front center.
Yeah, it was just niggas, front and center.
Niggas came down the block and did drive-bys.
Well, what it was,
Miles was snatching us out the bed at 2 in the morning, pulling us on the floor because niggas coming down the block shooting. It had nothing to do with what a nigga spoke on records.
It was pre-existing.
As I got older, I saw the niggas down the block. Now, you coming from poverty, you know, black kid, you know, a lot of people ain't educated. Your chances for a successful life is real slim, is what we thought. Man. You get me? Did I envision myself? I mean, I guess as a child, we all envision being, you know, I'm going to be a policeman, a fireman, a sports player. We all envision that as kids. But as I'm growing up in a single household in fucking Spook Town where niggas is doing drive-bys and selling sherm, I'm seeing that as my influence.
Right.
That nigga got a brand new car. He got motherfucking money up the ass. It's all the fancy, nice broads. You know what I'm saying? And them niggas is hard. That's my influence. So it wasn't because I heard a song and a nigga was saying, over here we hard, over here we wear red and blue, over here we do drive-bys. No, it was what I saw and what I thought was gonna make me successful as 100%. A nigga in the streets.
100%.
You get me? So that was my choice. When no daddy in the crib, and I'm seeing mom struggling, and then my sister is dating the hood niggas, and they pulling up with bread and fat. Nigga, I'm being one of them niggas.
Right.
You know, fuck it. Fuck what comes with it. Yeah, I know, you know, fucking drive-bys, and you might go to jail for serving and the enemies, and, you know, but that was my influence. Now, I listened to records. Rap started coming along. It was all East Coast, right?
Yeah.
But I listened to motherfucking Schoolie D. Schoolie D was some good shit.
Pulling guns on people.
But I was already banging. Did that influence my wanting to bang what, more? I mean, you know what I'm saying? No. It was like my man Prime say right now, give my theme music. You feel me? That was to us, that was just theme music to go along with the daily life of what we was already fucking doing. Right? So you had these rappers, you know, like Special Ed. And I listened to Special Ed.
I think everybody did. That's the disappointing part about what he said.
And I don't want to put too much on my nigga's shoulders, but I listened to Special Ed, you know, and how he had it made, and, you know, the magnificent, and, you know, we on the mission, and, you know, all that. I thought it was nice rap records. Cool. But when I grabbed the microphone, I didn't see my life as a party.
Right.
I've always felt that when it came to writing records. I never saw my life as a party, as something that was fun, because, again, I grew up in the hood. And even though it was fascinating to a nigga, or, you know, I'm all in, I still knew what that was. Mm-hmm. That wasn't fun.
Well, you know what it was, man. When NWA came out, it was like a call to action against all the systemic racism that had been happening, because police had been whooping black people's ass around the country for years, and nobody ever spoke on it. It was just kind of one of those things. It was never on the news. It was never this and that. But they highlighted that, and it was in response to the poverty and the systemic racism that was going on around the country or in their particular neighborhoods. Now, to say that that started the decay of, what was it exactly that he said, B?
That started it was the beginning of that time.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of like it caused destruction. And to me, what he said, the way I took it was like almost, I took offense to that, because he said that almost like, well, NWA destroyed hip hop. And you got to look at it a certain way, because at that time, he was signed to Profile Records. Who else was on Profile Records at
DJ
that time?
DJ Quick.
DJ Quick, Second to None. And Special Ed kind of went into obscurity after that.
Well, I think that came a little down the line.
A little bit later.
Quick and Second to None came along. But again, like I said, if you compare, you know, the rap form of Special Ed, and a lot of dudes were I call it braggadocious rap. A lot of dudes, you know, LL did it a lot.
Well, that's
I'm
what
bad, I'm this, I'm that, you know, and I get it. But then there were dudes like, to me, when they first came out, BDP.
Listen they were to my hood 9mm go bang.
They were hood to me. Schoolie D. I listened to Schoolie D. I listened to dudes like Steady B and Cool C. You know, that reminded me of block hustling, you know, dudes. You know, it was all kind of stuff I listened to.
And that to me is the biggest point of all of this, is that I thought the whole thing about all of art and rap and all these different things was to express your own opinion, your own perspective, your own experience, your own thing. Whether that's like you naming all these different artists. I thought that's what made, to me as a fan getting into it and then wanting to be part of the music industry and wanting to meet people like y'all, is like, it's because these were amazing stories, interesting stories. I learned a lot from listening to rap, and it was all these different perspectives that we didn't get from the movies, from the news, from whatever, our school books, whatever it was.
Now, Soren, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
You obviously being a white man, when you were growing up back in Baltimore.
Oh, Maryland. I didn't grow up in Baltimore.
Maryland.
Oh, Maryland.
Maryland,
I'm sorry.
Different from Baltimore.
I grew up right in between Baltimore and D.C.
Okay,
so
cool.
I was 20 miles from Baltimore, 20 miles from D.C.
Okay, got you. My bad. Did you feel like those records kind of gave you a further insight into the black plight, what was going on in the African-American communities?
Well, here's the interesting thing. In my neighborhood, I had black neighbors. We had a very, very diverse school and diverse area. So D.C., Baltimore, for everybody knows, those are two chocolate cities for one.
Mm-hmm.
But then beyond that, because of the government, people from all over the world live in our area. So we had Asian people living there. We had Hispanic people living there. We had people from Africa living there. We had people from everywhere going to my school. We had people, when you would go to D.C., you would see people you wouldn't recognize. Like, oh, who is that? I don't recognize what that person looks like. But beyond that, my parents didn't raise me that way to look at different things. But I had black friends. I had black neighbors. So I would go to stuff with them. They would come to our house. It wasn't unusual.
And you obviously had black girlfriends.
I did. So it was a funny story. I remember as an elementary school kid going to my dad because my parents, I didn't understand what racism was because my parents weren't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was blessed. A lot of people aren't like that. But I realized in fifth or sixth grade that I was attracted to black girls and the Asian girl that was in my, all these different girls that weren't white.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also attracted to the white girls. But I remember I said to my dad, I said, Dad, because I never heard anything bad. And I said, Dad, would you be mad if I married a black girl one day? And he said, as long as she's smart and she looks good, I don't care what she is. Mm-hmm. So right there, as a little kid, my dad was already telling me, like, look, let her be smart. Let her be somebody you like. It wasn't about her race or her religion or anything. But on top of that, remember when I was growing up, we had Marion Barry, the mayor of D.C. Mm-hmm. In Baltimore at the time, we had a black mayor also, Mayor Kurt Schmoke. A lot of my school teachers were black women. A lot of my school teachers were black men. A lot of my coaches were black men. So when I was growing up, I was looking up to black people, not only from an entertainment perspective in music, but as teachers, as educators, as government people, as people doing all kinds of jobs. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't unusual for me to see black men in a position of power like Marion Barry or Kurt Schmoke in Baltimore. And I'd be going to these cities all the time to play basketball, play soccer, do whatever I was doing. Go shopping for records, go to concerts, you know, whatever I was doing. So it was very different once I started traveling around the country, going to college, and then starting to write journalistic stuff, that I realized where I grew up was very unusual. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I think has given me a lot of perspective and has given me a lot of insight, because when I started hearing the Schoolie D's and the Boogie Down Productions and the Ice-T's and the N.W.A.'s on the early side of things, those records and those songs were what I was reading about in the newspaper, what I would see when I would go to D.C. or Baltimore, or what I would see on the news. So it was just from a different perspective. Schoolie D was the one. I never heard the dude with the gun in the newspaper talk. They never interviewed him. Mm-hmm. It was always the guilty dude. But Schoolie D said, I have the gun. KRS-One, my 9mm goes bang. So now I'm hearing it from these dudes and hearing it from their perspective, why they did, why they had a gun. Like I said a couple episodes ago, Schoolie D on Parkside 5-2. Parkside, my place in home. The PSK gangsters like to roam. Chibi in her hand, 32 in her socks, protecting our turf like it was for Knox. He also says on the Saturday Night album, on a corner selling weed is my friend Mike. I can't say that is wrong or that is right. Mm-hmm. I'm from Parkside 5-2. So even there, it's like all the laws have changed with weed. But Schoolie in 86 was saying, I'm not saying he's selling drugs is wrong or right. I'm just saying that's what he's doing. That's
man, in 86, that was some hella stuff to talk about you selling weed in the record.
Yeah.
Still, you grew up in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You grew up, Soren, you grew up in Maryland.
Yeah.
I grew up in Compton. We all grew up as you know, young kids, you know what I'm saying? Saturday morning cartoons and all of that. Mm-hmm. What would you say as you started growing up and witnessing and start to adapting and seeing shit, you know, as I like to call the underground scene? Mm-hmm. You know, because when you were a kid, your parents, if you have those type of parents or whatever, good nature parents, whatever, they try to shield you from a lot of shit, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's just face it, we grow up and, you know, we see our first pussy or we hear our first cuss word or, you know, we see our first set of titties or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So we see these influences. Motherfuckers pick up a gun. We've seen those scenarios. Mm-hmm. We've seen it throughout time. You shoot a motherfucker, you kill him, you go to prison, right? You go to court, whatever. We've seen that as kids, whatever. Yeah. We were influenced by some shit, right?
Oh, 100%.
I watched Superman. I watched Batman. As a kid, did I dress up in Halloween costumes? Superman or Batman, you get me? Mm-hmm. But I knew I couldn't jump off the roof and fucking fly, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Didn't try to jump off the building?
And there might have been some kids who weren't raised properly who got up on the fucking roof and jumped off and like, nigga, I could fly, right? Mm-hmm. But I considered myself to be a little educated with, you know, parents. And even though I grew up in the hood, I wasn't no dummy, right? When I started selling dope, it wasn't because a nigga told me to sell dope.
You did it because you sold.
I did it because I thought I could make some motherfucking money. Yeah. And I could get myself out of fucking poverty type shit, right? When I started gangbanging, it wasn't because a nigga made me gangbang. I saw that as unity for me. Because as a kid who didn't have that older brother.
It was a family.
Or had that older uncle, or the uncles was what, it, you know. Niggas I go to school with and I start hanging with as a kid and I'm whatever, whatever. Nigga introduced me to the neighborhood. This is like my family now. You know, these is the homies I'm with. So that was my influence. Like I said, so when rap records came along, when I heard Ice-T say 6 in the morning, or I heard Easy go to Boys in the Hood was always hard, I'm already one of the boys in the hood.
Exactly.
You feel me? Now, my nigga said that, you know how they do them with the questions, N.W.A. or Wu-Tang or Jay-Z or Biggie or, you know. Right. So they asked my nigga, you know, N.W.A. or Wu-Tang. And he say he choose Wu-Tang because Wu-Tang for the kids. Wu-Tang was N.W.A. in a New York form. Mm-hmm. Before the time of, you know, because now we got sets in New York, and we are represented with Bloods and Crips in New York now. Mm-hmm. But there was a time, you know, I've been going to New York since, what, fucking 88.
Right.
I knew crews and cliques and niggas had their sections or whatever. I never witnessed Bloods or Crips, but that's another story. Wu-Tang, you know, from a neighborhood, Shaolin, Staten Island. Mm-hmm. Niggas get down over here. It's been murders. It's been drug deals. Wu-Tang spoke this to you. They told
and
you.
And it's reflected in their music.
And you
they
know.
Said they did it too.
Clicked up. You know, we started off, you know, AK Shaolin and, you know, pointed to Desert Eagle that his mother's not. And, you know, so to say that that's for the kids and shit is kind of confusing. And then to say that N.W.A. was for the appetite of destruction of our youth because the music was what was. Let's face it, the music took off. When motherfuckers were able to hear a motherfucker go fuck and shit and bitch and hoe and nigga my strap and fuck you and fuck the police, it brought another element of to the art as of.
Well, it's funny you say that, Eight.
Niggas didn't go out and go, N.W.A., man, one of them niggas went out and said, be like me.
Right.
Join a gang. And a lot of y'all don't even know this. We didn't even claim gangs back when we put out records. You didn't hear me go, nigga, I'm from Trag New and we wear blue.
Well,
and
that's a fairly new thing, to be honest with you.
Exactly.
That's just probably happened over the past, I would say probably Quick was one of the early ones to start really kind of pronouncing where he was from.
Well, if you go back and look at Rhyme Pay, well, actually, Abe, we talked about this in my book, The History of Gangsta Rap. The dude specifically didn't want to advertise that.
Exactly.
Or not only safety reasons, but also popularity. So if you look, all the early dudes that were from sets wore neutral colors on their album covers, in the videos, or they wore black. So, I mean, it's like,
I didn't want to alienate myself because, first of all, I considered myself reporting for all street niggas. I didn't give a fuck whether you was a Crip, Blood, if you was from the enemy Crip hood, or I wanted all niggas who were in my walk of life to bang my music because I'm speaking on, it don't matter because we wear blue or you wear red. I bet you this happened to one of y'all over there. I bet you it happened to the homie. I bet. So it wasn't like I was trying to tell kids across America, oh, do what we doing. You get me?
Bang.
Get in a 6'4" and claim Trag New and shoot at your enemies and do all that shit. Because if you listen to my records, I always told you the consequence of banging.
And that, to me, is one of the keys to this.
I never told you that your life was finna be lucrative and fun by being from the hood and gangbanging. I never told you that on records. I told you what a lot of niggas went through growing up in my walk of life.
Hey, hey, before y'all go any further, we go take a quick break, pay some bills here, and we go come right back.
Yeah. AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So basically, we never spoke on the fucking I guess you want to say the rewards of gang banging or being from the hood. It was always
look at growing up in the hood.
If you
look in the song eight, break it down at the end of the song.
Growing up in the hood, I talk about whatever. Menace to society, straight up menace.
Yeah.
I talk about the flip side of neighborhood, whatever. Mm-hmm. I wrote songs like Nigga Struggling. I wrote songs like The Hood Took Me Under. I wrote songs that basically portrayed the gangster lifestyle, but it never ended up because I don't give a fuck how rich or lucrative or, you know, hood niggas is driving in Rolls Royces now and Lamborghinis and shit. But a true hood nigga know there's pitfalls behind
right.
that. So it was never portrayed or exploited to the youth that this is what you do. You get me?
And I think that's the big part that's missing because Schoolie D, Ice-T, N.W.A., yourself, Quick, a lot of the early most popular artists always broke down the pitfalls. Project Pat came later. He's another dude that was always talking about you're going to get incarcerated, you're going to get shot. This person, look at Colors, Ice-T, talking about, you know, sister got tracks on her arm. What is that from? Drug use. I mean, it's like everybody is breaking it down in different ways. You're going to get jacked.
And then there's another thing I paid attention to when they asked him the question. And he reverted to saying something like, so for real? Like, this is what we doing? Like, when he spoke on the fact that N.W.A. was getting popular and the music was, you know, so he made a comment like, so for real, this is what we doing? Like to say like, okay, we finna let hip hop let this in. This is what we finna do. So we finna let niggas start talking about driving in old school cars and wearing khaki suits and saying bitch and hoe and fuck the pole. So that's what we finna do? Like, what do you mean? That's my artistic expression. That's what I'm doing.
Huh. I'm gonna play what he said right here, real quick. If you
go ahead.
I'm gonna play the comments said by Special Ed. He even got a Jerry curl, so he can't talk shit about nobody.
Wu-Tang.
Okay.
Wu-Tang is for the kids.
Wu-Tang
now,
for
you
the
know
children.
What? Besides that, man, Wu-Tang was dropping knowledge and positivity.
Right.
You know, N.W.A. brought the age of destruction.
Damn. Jesus Christ.
N.W.A. brought the age of destruction to our children and our culture.
Wow.
Period. Hey, I respect all of them as men. But as the art form, and you want me to speak on the art form, I'm going to tell you what it is. That's where it started.
Wow.
That's where the agenda started.
Well,
it didn't start there.
That was the start of the demise of his career.
But it was in the... But all those things were happening in society for decades before N.W.A., before Ice Cube had wrote his first rap. He had nothing to do with the creation of any of that. That had been happening in the United States of America for decades.
But then after that part where we just played, he went on to say some shit like for real, this is what we doing? Like speaking on the music that N.W.A. was, that was getting popular. And just he said Wu-Tang was for the kids, and did he say like there was educational?
It was positive and uplifting.
My nigga Raekwon said he pointed a gun at a mother's knot.
And there ain't no hating on Wu-Tang because we all
love it's Wu-Tang. It's not even hating on Wu-Tang because they were expressing.
They were expressing
the same shit. We growing up in the projects. We living on Staten Island and Shaolin. That's
Everybody
our hood. That's our spot. And that's how we get out. They words reflected
and
where you know
All gangster rap was. I'm sorry to cut you off.
But you, but you, but even not to cut you. But you hear when he said that the expressions from everyone in the room was like they sort of kind of laughed at one point. Like, nigga, are you for real? Like, whoa. Like, then he listened what he said. Like, they destroyed the culture. The culture of what? Hip hop.
That's what he pretty much said, and, he tried to clean it up a little bit. He tried to clean it up and dress it up. Soren, I want to hear your take, because you was about to say something. I know you're going to say something profound.
My thing is this. When you listen to Cash Rules Everything Around Me, Can It All Be So Simple, these are not happy songs. They're very sad.
It's gangster rap.
It's gangster rap from the East Coast perspective, but it's also, I'd say it's more street reporting, that type of stuff, because it's not gangbanging.
Well, it's reality rap.
It's reality rap.
It's reality rap,
Rap is street reporting. But my point is, when Raekwon and Inspector Deck and all the, in particular, when they're doing their verses, they are not, to 8's point, they're not celebrating we're in the hood. They're talking about the struggle, the problems, the disappointment, the anger. And they're also doing it just as MC8 did, just as Ice Cube did, in their perspective from the Staten Island perspective.
To me, all reality rap was a bunch of guys talking about their neighborhood from their perspective. Right. Now, I will admit, during about 95, 96, once record companies discovered that gangster rap was lucrative, you saw a bunch of crazy groups start popping up that were ultra-violent, kind of like, you know,
but still,
that's entertainment.
But the thing is,
I want to say my nigga was high or something. That's what I'm going to just say. I'm going to say he was high or something, what he thought. Maybe he didn't think it through. You get me? Because I just don't see how you can even fix your mouth to say some dumb shit.
There's
like
two
that.
Things of this. One, rap did not start political. Rap started party braggadocio, which is a big misconception. So people have that in their mind, but it's not true. It was the routines and the braggadocio. It was Cold Crush. It was Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. It wasn't until years later that the political commentary came into rap. So first of all, let's make sure we understand that. But then beyond that, when N8 and Steel, you guys both notice, when there were pop rappers, people thought they were whack.
No, 100%. Down.
It wasn't any good. They liked some pop rap. So what I'm saying is every form, every subgenre of rap, just like every other form of music, there's going to be good illustrations of it. There's going to be bad,
exactly.
Whether that's critically or commercially. And sometimes those intersect, sometimes they don't. And
I couldn't have said it better myself.
And the problem is to me, several of the problems are gangster rap was so different and so powerful, which is why it became so popular. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, just like with pop rap, with conscious rap, with whatever other type of rap, backpack rap, some of it got popular, some of it didn't. Some of the artists were better, some of them weren't. When you have a dude just saying, end this, be that, I'm going to shoot up 3,000 people, none of us are going to sit here and say that's as good as Ice-T or Ice Cube or N.W.A., but that's with every type of rap. That's with every type of music.
And at the end of the day, Soren, it's entertainment. I'll tell you this. I've never went to a movie and saw a bunch of gratuitous violence and went outside and just started shooting people in the parking lot. No. I just thought it was a cool movie, right? I've listened to albums that where they may have took, you know, Ghetto Boys, one of my favorite groups. You know, as soon as if we ever get to this list tonight, you know, Ghetto Boy is one of my favorite groups. Shout out to my boy Willie D. Me and him was on the phone all day today talking about some stuff we about to start doing. But they had some songs like Assassins and stuff like right. that. I didn't take that as thinking that Bushwick was running around Houston
mind
with
of a
knife.
Lunatic.
Or mind of a lunatic. I didn't take that Scarface was really sitting in the room somewhere with candles all around him, thinking of the people he murdered. You know what I mean? He would be in prison. I knew that. It's common sense, right? But I think what gangster rap did, and I keep saying this by me being in the Midwest, it really, because I knew stuff had been going on in the hood. You remember, you know, growing up in Cleveland, before I left, I saw crack starting to come in, right? And I saw guys that were my peers, guys of, you know, either class above me or a couple classes above me, Next thing, they riding down the street in 98 Oldsmobiles, and they can hardly be over the thing, and they got the sounds. And, you know, it's like everybody out there like, ooh, you see Corey got a new, you see he got a 98 Oldsmobile. And next thing you know, he ain't coming to class no more.
Right.
But he in the parking lot after school, and he got a knot full of money because he going to go buy everybody hamburgers. At the spot, meet me over here, we going to go buy hamburgers. So for a minute, that image, I would replay that image in my mind and think, man, I'm trying to do this football shit, man. Maybe I need to stay here and get my hustle on. They getting rich. I'm going to miss out on something. You know, I didn't know because when you're young, you're impressionable, right? What I didn't know is that a lot of those guys would wind up in prison, you know, 8-9 years later. Some cases earlier, right? But gangster rap didn't make none of them dudes go out there and sell dope. That was there. I remember when I grew up, before we bought our house, right, on 103rd, we lived on a street called Chester. It was an apartment building in the back. You know how it is, soaring back that way. You got those apartments, and they got a thing under them. You would see needles all outside. Because I remember my mom beating my ass one day because I went outside with no shoes on.
Because she didn't want you to step on
the needle. She didn't want me to step on the needle. There was needles everywhere. And gangster rap wasn't in existence. We was listening to Bootsy Collins and all that stuff. It wasn't. So would we go out and blame Bootsy for the heroin epidemic that was going on in Cleveland at that time?
Crack was predated gangster rap.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So special ed sound like he'd been sitting in the special ed class.
I don't think he'd been sitting in a special ed class. I don't want to dig him out that hard. You know what I'm saying? I just feel like in some positions, like I say, he started rapping when he was 17. Like I said, his youth or how he grew up was a reflection of what he wrote about. I'm a MC. You get me? So I'm a rap about, you know, being 007 and shit like that and on missions.
I'm on a mission.
I'm going to make feel-good records. You feel me? Let my nigga grew up in fucking the projects in the Bronx and got his ass beat a couple of times. And mama was on crack. And, you know, pops was in the pen for, you know, hustling heroin and shit like that. I'm pretty sure his story would have been different. To be an artist, you know, this game is competition. It's not designated for whoever. You know, you put out good music, motherfuckers gonna love it. I mean, shit, he had a gold fucking album when he fucking dropped, you know, because that's what represented hip-hop at the time.
I still say HR kind of letting him off the hook. I still say a lot of his words were based on malice in his heart, whether it's whether subconscious or conscious. Because the way he said it, you could see he was just real deliberate, like, okay, y'all really doing this right now? I'm going to go in. They ruined everything. He might as well have came out and said, man, my record sales slowed up after that. People stopped fucking with me because they wanted to hear that shit over there. And I was done. I was out of here.
I mean, that's true. But he's not going to admit to that. I'm not going to turn around and admit to, man, they kind of killed my career. Instead of saying they killed my career, I'm going to say they destroyed the culture. You get me? I'm not going to say they killed my career because, shit, I'm special fucking Ed.
Special Ed sounds like a hater.
So, but what I'm going to say is because my direction wasn't that for the almighty pure hip-hop.
Right.
And, again, New York is the mecca and the birth of hip hop. So for him to be one of those forefront niggas, you know, he was one of the forefathers of the beginning of hip hop with as the aspect of is how I look at it. Nigga, you could ask me about Special Ed and I'd be like, nigga, that motherfucker, nigga, that doo-doom. Doo-doom.
That shit was
everybody banged that. All
of it was good music. I was a Special Ed fan. I still am a Special Ed fan. Yeah.
But after getting introduced to hip-hop and me roaming the streets of Compton and seeing my influence.
Other things appeal to you more.
I don't bang no Special Ed no more. Right. I'm going to go bang me some BDP. Right. I'm going to go bang me some Just Ice.
Yeah, that's what we
I'm going to go bang me some PSK from Schooly D. Yep. I'm going to go bang me some niggas that I feel that is relevant to my growing up in lifestyle.
Preach.
You get me? So no disrespect. I'm not going to turn over. Just like when hip-hop started, I banged fucking Tone Loc. I played a little Young MC.
Tone Loc is actually the first open Crip record, Tone Loc. You know,
but
you know, it's in his name.
But his popularity came from Wild Thang, Young MC. You know, you wanted
Bust
you
the move. Got,
we, I
but
banged,
that shit was jamming though.
Exactly.
Hell yeah.
I banged that. Mm-hmm. But
move is great.
When I got introduced to niggas who was walking my walk. When I got introduced to a fucking Ice-T or the fucking Dub C or fucking whatever, that's my music. You get me? Not to say I didn't still bang some of that other shit. I still bang me some motherfucking Pete Rock and CL Smooth or some Tribe Called Quest. But when it was time for me to write my lyrics,
you had
I'm finna tell you about, nigga, last night, nigga, we was coming home and niggas dumped on us. The homie was at the burger stand getting him some food, and the niggas came through and jacked him and laid him down.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to tell you about the bitch over here who got three babies by three different niggas from three different enemy hoods, and a nigga went to go see his baby, and he got smoked. You get me? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you that because I'm a gangbanging nigga representing the hood. When I try to change my motherfucking life and go get a job, ain't shit finna work for me because I got a fucking record and shit. That's what I'm finna tell you about.
Yeah, you got to talk about that because those people, you were a voice for the voiceless.
I can't tell you about, hey, man, hey, life is a party, and today we popping bottles, or, and not even at that time, like, whatever, like, niggas rapped about, because there were records,
get
me?
Well,
but, nigga, I'm finna tell you about what went on in Trag New Park last night, and what happened to niggas over here, and who got killed, and who this, and who I need to inform niggas, because, really? Mm-hmm. This is what I'm going through every day.
Well,
fuck the rap shit.
Well, before we go any further, we go into a break, but I was looking at the time. We better go into come back with those top 50 gangster rap albums of all time. Because I know you got a, you got your list tonight somewhere.
Yep.
So we can continue on. We'll be right back.
Yeah. AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we back with more Gangsta Chronicles. You know, we've been talking about gangsta rap for pretty much the last 45 minutes, right? I think it's time we get into our list, Soren.
All right.
You ready?
All right, so here's from, what are we doing, from 20 to 10 or 20 to 15, since we're...
Just
do 20 to 15 and we continue out. And I think I kind of want to close it out next week or probably the week after.
From the 15 to 1?
No, you go 20 to 15 tonight and then
15 to 10.
And then we'll
do
another
one because I want to do something big for that top 10.
So to me, here's, and obviously we're all going to be voting later and putting it in, but 20, I got 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Trying. 19, I got Mobb Deep, Murder Music. 18, I got Scarface, The Diary. 17, I got Ice-T, OG. 16.
Hold on, you got The Diary at number 18 and Get Rich or Die Trying. Man, that's a cold list, man.
Just wait.
Huh?
17, I got Ice-T, OG. 16, I got Kool G Rap, Polo, Live and Let Die. 15, I got Uncle Sam's Curse.
I like that at 15. I like Uncle Sam's Curse at number 15. This top 10 is going to be a motherfucker, dog.
Top 15 is crazy.
Yes, you know, you think about it, man. Get Rich or Die Trying. When 50 came with that first album, A, what did you think about it?
I thought it was a breath of fresh air from all the singy-songy shit that was going on. you know. We was in that era, you know. We was in the era of baller terrific and flossiness and, right. You know, G5 planes and wagons and, you know, and you was either balling or you was in love, you get me, on rap records. That's all rap records was back then. Between that era, you know, my man Ja Rule had that run, where everything was sing-songy. And
y'all was coming with hits, though, dog. Y'all had some serious records.
Which was, you know, no disrespect, but like I said, that's what it was, you know. Everything was the party, you know, the party raps and, you know, the women and the bikinis and the parties and...
Well, I would like to think in part what was going on in New York at that time. Puffy had a huge presence. Bad Boy Records had a huge presence, and that's what they did. Because you look at Biggie, even though he was a reality rap rapper to me, you know, Biggie talked that street shit like a motherfucker, right? But, you know, with Puff, he was always going to make the hooks real grandiose, and there was going to be a lot of singing. There was going to be bridges in the songs and shit like that. It was going to be a lot of dancing in shiny suits. So it was a welcome departure from that because 50 brought some of the same elements, but he did it almost in the G way. And when he got with those boys from the West Coast, you know, when he got with Dr. Dre, it was just on another level because it was a lot of excitement generated around that album.
Yeah, because that's, like I said at the time, it was the love-making champagne era.
I know you probably hated that shit, didn't you, right?
Yeah, I did.
Y'all got to understand some people. A is the Stephen King of fucking rap. He's everything dark and sinister.
Not that it's dark and sinister, but I'm like my nigga Rakim, man. I ain't no joke, man. You feel me? And it's a time and a place for all that. I mean, we have all kind of artists, you know. Everything is, you know, lights and flash and, you know, look at me and, you know, look how many girls I can fuck and how much money I could spend and how much champagne and bottle popping and, you know, that's...
You was popping during that era, man. Did you ever get an exec come to you and say, hey, man, we want to get you some Timberland beats?
Well, yeah.
Beats from the Pharrell and them and have you start doing some other stuff. If I'd have saw you in a shiny suit, dog, I'd have...
Yeah, I had to go through that era because, like I said at the time, all the labels were trying to back away from the reality situation, especially what was going down, because you know
Ice-T over there with the cop killers.
We used to fight like a motherfucker, man. We used to fight conventions and Jack the Rappers and all that. Man, we used to fight niggas and do all that shit because you know we was bringing our beefs and our element from back home and into the rap world because niggas didn't understand that
it was real.
I'm still from the streets.
Man, I know it was some beatdowns at the New Music Seminar.
All that type of shit. So, and then, like I said, when Ice-T came with Cop Killer, and then we had all the bitch shit, you know, with Dog and them and the Too Short. Then we had all the gangster shit with 8 and the Quicks and all that shit.
Though it wasn't Gangster 2 Live Crew.
What happened with Pac made labels start going, we don't want to touch that shit. And then, you know, Suge was around here whooping niggas' asses and all that shit. So it made motherfuckers get scared. Thus came the era of security in the lobbies at record labels and shit like that.
Oh, all that it got shut down once Death Row came, because, you know, I got my job with the first publishing company. I was with Minor Music then, right? And I remember they had sent me to Warner Brothers to go. We had some sync business, right? And I was used to just bailing in the building and going to go see who I see. They said, no, we need your ID. You got to wait right here. The dude got to come. You got to sign in. We need to see your driver's license. And I was like, damn, what the hell is going on? Priority had installed a whole, like,
like a bank vault.
Yeah, like a bank vault security. Like, you're not getting up in this motherfucker without no appointment.
So, period. But yeah, it was that different time of labels trying to change the format of hip hop, and you know, like I said, that's the era we got introduced to a lot of the flashy Puffy and you know the Ja Rules and all that. So when 50 dropped, you know, Get Rich or Die Trying, it was just refreshing, man, because to me, I considered it on some street shit.
For real, it was a gangster album. It was a gangster rap album.
And to me, it kind of changed the format and unlocked the door, you know, because they tried to lock us out. But after that dropped, it kind of made the the sustaining of reality rap, or niggas basically who didn't want to party and dance.
See,
it
50,
gave her, yeah. It gave us the chance to come back because, you know, Snoop dropped and then,
right.
You know, Dre and then
Game came.
Yeah. And then, you know, then we had the T.I.'s and then, you know, all of this. So it kind of gave us a lane again to, you know, get our sustainability back.
Yeah, because I think during that time, man, 50 don't get the credit that he deserved oftentimes for that album because it was a phenomenal album. And I think people wanted to see him. He got so big to where people actually wanted to see him lose after a while, I think.
Yeah. But he had built himself up through the mixtapes and the street albums so hard that
he was undeniable. You couldn't stop him. It wasn't no blackballing. The blackballing didn't work on him because it was almost like him being shot lent credence to his whole career. You feel what I'm saying? It was almost like him getting shot and then him. It was almost like the same shit with Pop. Like, you know, and after a while, it was like, I used to hear motherfuckers talk like, man, you know what? If a rapper gets shot, they blow up. And I even think, man, some of this shit, you start seeing people orchestrating fake shootings and shit like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that was part of the reason why I got my job at that time, because before, I'd applied to a few labels and wouldn't nobody give me. But then once people started running up in them offices, I think they wanted brothers like me up in there to try to stop people. And I told them, I said, I'm not security. If y'all want to hire security, y'all get that. Hey, Norms, I'll get those buzzes sometimes. Can you go see what these guys want? I'm like, man, that's not my fucking department. Y'all go see what he want. He here for his fucking shit.
Yeah.
I ain't got no list, but I know my 20 to 15. I'm going to go King T, Act the Fool album.
Incredible.
I'm going to go the first Eastsiders album.
Deuces and Trays?
No, the first one.
The first one.
It's called the Eastsiders.
The Eastsiders, okay, that's hard.
I'm going to go
Got Beef is my favorite song.
I'm gonna go to J.O. What You Gonna Do album. Man, I love that album.
It's
man.
A great album.
My favorite song on there is Easy to Get In.
Hey, J.O. was hard.
Bangs, man. I'm gonna go Above the Law, the Living Like Hustlers album.
Phenomenal.
And then my 15, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go Scarface, The World Is Yours, man.
Really?
I like that, man.
Yeah.
That's good. You went back on him.
Yeah, yeah.
People forget about that album.
You got a lot of Scarface on here.
Yeah, we got a lot of Scarface.
Shit. I got more coming up too.
I actually had that higher. The World Is Yours. I like that album.
Yeah.
He had that song on there, you feel me? The one where he didn't have no hook on it, A New Day. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, start off like that. All I got to do is thank God for my mother. That was a hard song right there. That was dope right there.
Face is one of the best ever.
And I bangs that shit today. That motherfucker. And I got it. The other one higher, though. My favorite cut, though, that Jesse James, man.
Woo. Oh, Jesse James, that bum, 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum. And that's when Mike Dean has started coming out there because, you know, Lil J has sent Mike Dean out here to kind of sit up under Dre.
I come around, this motherfucker start to do you like Jesse James.
That shit was cold.
Man, that motherfucker record right there is killer.
But that's the beauty of Scarface is that, like you ate, to survive in the different eras, different production styles, but be able to maintain who he was as an artist.
Definitely.
And like we even had early on, Deeply Rooted. I mean, that's a 2015 album.
Yeah, Deeply Rooted was hard.
We got albums that are spanning like 20 plus years. So it's a beautiful thing. Scarface, those that know, I think, give Face a lot of credit, but I think he deserves more every time.
So you would consider King T as a gangster rapper?
I consider.
I always thought the Licks was like a hip hop collective. Like, I always
but the Licks is not.
Not King T.
That's not King T. King T is that's his crew,
the
but
Lick
he's
foundation.
Yeah, but King T spoke of hood themes, and he spoke of neighborhood
you
themes.
You better bring a gun.
The Licks the Licks was all about, like I say, you have some artists who are outside of what we call reality rap. Niggas is just artists.
Right.
And they make songs in their art form, you know. And that's like the Alcoholics. That's like fucking the Souls of Mischief to me. You know, that's
Violated Peoples.
Exactly. You know, people have their own lanes for their music. And
you remember the Nonce? I always loved the Nonce.
Mm-hmm.
They were so good.
Oh, the Nonce, I used to sell mixtapes.
That album, MC. That album is incredible.
I got the rhymes and beats. That shit was hard. Remember that?
Remember the Militia, nigga.
Of course.
Man, that shit with that, all that
Burn.
Shit.
Burn. Shout out to Mr. Tan and Miss Toy, the homegirl.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. There's a lot, and that's the other thing.
But like I said, that's the other side of hip hop. You know, everybody isn't, you know. Neighborhood, you know, artists.
Right.
You know, we have artists that, you know, are different in form. Special ed, you feel me? Shit. Mm-hmm. Everybody has not walked the life of underprivileged. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't expect that from a motherfucker who grew up outside of, you know, or across the tracks. Over here, man, it's dark. Over there, it's light. Great schools, you know what I'm saying? Parents together, motherfucking, you know, clean up your room and mow the front yard and walk the dog. It's motherfuckers who come from that lifestyle. But it's motherfuckers who still come from the projects and hard life and can't get a job and got a record and got to sell dope and niggas talking about choices and shit, but you don't have them. You
right.
feel me? So... the music reflects where you come from. That's what I say.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, man. You're on.
What
gave
about you, still?
Hard task. Okay, here I go. Y'all want me to go from 15 on up to 10?
No, we're going from 20 to 15.
From 20 to 15, okay. Jail Felony, What You Go Do? Mob Deep Murder Music. Dub C and DJ Aladdin.
Low Profile?
Low Profile, the Low Profile album. Exhibit, Weapons of Mass Destruction. That was a gangster rap album to me. Notorious Big, Ready to Die. 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Trying.
Weapons of Mass Destruction?
That was a good, man, that's the one, don't correct me if I'm wrong, that they had some bangs on there. I thought that was a gangster rap album to me.
I would have said the first record, the one with Get Your Walk On.
No, that's Restless.
Yes,
that's
I'd say Restless. I like Restless.
That is an amazing album.
Restless.
You know what? I'm changing my pick, and I'm picking Restless.
Yeah,
because,
Get Your Walk On is on Restless.
Yeah, Restless got
that. Because I had some shit confused.
Restless got Restless. X on it, X. And it got the motherfucker.
So I'm changing
that,
because that was gangster rap to me. That shit was hard as hell.
Well, Get Your Walk On, that's Battle Cat did that, and that, to me.
My nigga got the old no, let's get it, drunk, and fuck, yeah, that was my shit. Man.
That shit
that's
was
Reckless
over.
Right there with the low rider.
I changed
the rider switches in
Superheads
there.
Superheads in the video,
yeah,
too.
That motherfucker's cracking.
That was a gangster rap album, because when I heard that album, I was going
got
to Vegas with my
on,
wife.
Got the song on there with Nate Dogg, too.
Eric Sermon.
Yeah,
there's a lot of.
And that was when we first.
Incredible.
You remember,
get,
that
I'm
was like the last little final phase of CDs, right?
Way home.
That was like the finest little phase of the CDs, right? Remember when CDs was big? That was like in that final phase of people
was,
actually putting out physical units, right? When people actually had to go out and sell records without all this fake shit that's going on now, right? I remember I was going from here to Vegas, and I banged that motherfucking Restless album the whole time, just kept bring it back, because that beat was just so hard, and I had like, I just got a competition sound system put in my truck. I had an Expedition at that time, right? Mm. That's when the Expeditions was crazy. No, I had a Navigator. And I just got like a big sound system put in there. And when that, I could drink a whole Hennessy Fifth. Some call it a problem, but I'm calling
it a gift.
Just the way that was hitting with the bump, bump, bump. Yeah. I was like, dun, dun, dun. You was just jamming all the way to the thing. That shit was hard. Shout out to Exhibit. Exhibit is underrated as fuck, man.
Absolutely.
I think Exhibit and all them cats, man, we got a lot of underrated cats out here, man.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
A lot of good music, man. It's a lot of good music that came from the element, I guess, of what we call reality rap, because it's not all about gangster shit, because everybody wasn't claiming a neighborhood. So,
yeah,
got a lot of dudes who's underrated as far as, you know, as far as this list goes. It's been a lot of classic music that people have probably forgotten about. And I'm reminded every time, you know, we do this shit about the greatness and where hip-hop came from.
Absolutely.
Like I said, I was a nigga listening to fucking from Kool G Rap to motherfucking Mixmaster Spade, man.
And it's just so much good music.
To intake it all.
And it's like, and it's never ending. Like, you know, we doing this list of the top 50 things. Again, these are just our opinions, right? But I say they're somewhat subjective opinions. We're not up here just trying to force nothing. We got a voted system. And y'all let us know what y'all think, man, in the comments, man. Y'all might tell us our list is full of, y'all might tell us we full of shit.
I'm going to leave y'all with one more. Boss Deeper.
Oh, man, I forgot about that one.
Born Gangsters.
Boss is hard, man. You know what killed her off?
I banged that shit about 10 times on the way up here, man. I couldn't get enough of it. Let me say, I got the 5 skills. I'm trying to get the watts, but I'm stuck in Baldwin Hills. She used to flow like a motherfucker.
Hell yeah. And that sample was hard, too. They was the first one.
I used that. That was my sample.
Yeah, they sped it up.
Doo-doop, doo. Doo-doop, doo. That's the Hood Took Me Under remix. Man,
That was
all that, man. Boss was my people's, man. I'm in their video, Process of Elimination. Yeah. Yep. They came to LA and shot the video and hit me up. Niggas was always hitting me up to come get in their video.
Where is Boss still alive?
Last time I heard from Boss, she was in Detroit on the radio. That was the last time I heard of her.
And I heard she was having some serious health problems.
Yeah, because I heard she had got real sick. So shout out to Boss, man. If anybody out there know Boss, tell her to get at us. I would love to have her on the show, man.
Yeah, we need to get Boss on the show.
I would love to have Boss on the show.
And the crazy thing is, when I got the album, Born Gangsters, and then I was listening to it and reading the credits and, like, working, she did a lot of stuff with Def Jeff, who's also very underrated and underappreciated.
He's a dope-ass producer, too, as well. Incredible.
Incredible. And Eric Sermons. She had a very, very excellent album and very unexpected, I guess would be another way.
I think what it was, I know some stuff that came out about her, like a lot of other people that, she's not really a gangster. And I didn't give a fuck. She made dope-ass music.
Yeah, her album is incredible.
I don't think Stephen King really out there, you know, shopping people.
I hope not.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think he really no serial killer, nothing like that. I think he just made really incredible horror movies, right?
He'd have more bodies than about anybody.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Man, before we get out of here, I'm going to tell y'all again.
Just one more update, man. It says she had a major stroke and seizure in 2017.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And in 2021, a GoFundMe was set up to raise $15,000. So,
ain't that just sad how our hip hop artists, man, like our people that was in the culture just get left to hang on the dry?
I think I said this a couple of shows back. It's crazy how you can go work for one of these big major corporations right now, you know, just a regular worker, General Motors or a hospital or whatever. You get medical, right? Mm-hmm. You would think that when an artist signs to a major label or whatever, that in their contract they would stipulate, they give me some of that fucking Universal or Sony health insurance.
Because
right?
They have self-health insurance for the rest of the employees there.
Right. You better, you goddamn from the motherfucker mailing the papers to the nigga pushing the janitor shit, cleaning up the offices.
And you really the motherfuckers, you know, providing the capital for that business
goddamn
to run.
Goddamn right. Why should one of their highest earning
one of their most important employees. They should want to have you nice and healthy. That's a good point.
You should have been. We would have thought about that though. Yeah. You get me?
I heard Prodigy had that written into his agreement though for Mobb Deep. You know, rest in peace, Prod, because you know he had the sickle cell. He had that written into their contract, man, that they get the health insurance. It wouldn't be hard for them to do, though, bro. You got it for everybody else in there.
I mean, but I guess, you know, as a young motherfucker, and, you know, a lot of us young signed our contracts and whatever, the last thing you thinking about is, yeah, health man, throw in my contract, nigga, I get 5 years free health insurance right. and dental. Nigga, you ain't thinking about that. Like, your thing is, nigga, I need $250,000, $300,000, or I need $1 million.
Right now, do you pay for your insurance right
Hell
now?
Yeah.
So you got to pay, and I'm pretty sure that the premium is high as hell.
Yeah, so that would have been a hell of a, you get me, in your contract.
Absolutely.
Okay. Don't even trip. What? Y'all want to give me $250,000? Fuck that $250,000. Give me $225,000, and I want five years. How long is my contract? What? Y'all getting what, 5 albums? Okay, for the next 5 to 7 years, I want free health insurance.
Because you know what that allows you to do? It allows you to actually get Cobra in an event. Like, let's say your career ends or whatever. You can take that insurance they give you. You now get it at a discounted rate of pretty much what they're paying for it, and you can continue to pay that premium yourself, which is going to be a lot cheaper than if you would have went in and got that on your own.
Absolutely.
I mean, because what? I just made you $10 million fucking dollars, right?
That's what I'm saying. And they only gave you
probably gave you 1.5%, 2%
of it anyway. Throw in some health insurance for me, hell yeah.
Like, you said, y'all ain't finna give me what I'm supposed to get. You know what I'm saying?
Throw in some
y'all
health insurance.
Y'all giving me
and
chump
it should
change.
Be, fuck, 5 years, lifetime. Because they've already made it. It's not going to cost them nothing to do that.
Or well, if they did a year after the contract's over.
No. Mm-hmm. Keep my shit for as long as you want to keep me. So you trying, what, you finna hold my shit and my publishing and all right, that right. shit for the next 30 years? I can't own my shit for the next 30 years. Okay, so for as long
you
as
should you should be, because you're technically, you can argue. That's a hell of a case. You can argue that you're one of the
I'm an
biggest
employee.
Employees of the business.
Why
you
not?
Know, you out there doing this yeah. or that. If you was a sales rep for them, let's say you were the highest earning sales rep for that company, right? You sold more CDs in the company than anybody else, to all the chain stores and everybody. They going to make
that's
sure that motherfucker don't fall
sick. I wonder if the big time artists
position.
Do that. I wonder if the Beyoncés and the Taylor Swifts and the motherfuckers.
Well, they got so
like,
much motherfucking money. I'm pretty sure Beyoncé and Jay ain't tripping off
still,
no premium.
But still, wouldn't you want them to foot that bill?
Hell yeah, they should.
Because let's think about it. Yeah, I'm making a gang of money, but how much is you making, right? Mm. How much is you making? So, yeah. I think on my new contract negotiations, I want you to pay for the next 5 to 10 years of my health insurance. Oh. Take it out of whatever the fuck you getting already.
Hell yeah. And on another note, I got a couple other things before we go. Let's keep the homie Crazy Bone up in prayers right
Definitely,
now. Everybody
sure.
know, you know, he was a part of the Digital Soapbox family for a long time. And still family. You know, that's hometown right there. Crazy, we praying for you, man. And
absolutely.
Exhibit went in on special ed.
Mm. Oh, I didn't see what
I saw. I saw one of his comments, and I actually replied to Exhibit on one of his comments, and I said that not to go back on the shit, but I said that this lifestyle wasn't for everyone.
Right?
You get me? A lot of people can't understand. You know, because let's face it, niggas start gangbanging was dumb, you know, and some of them still do. And we got a lot of that from when I was coming up and when I first started coming in the rap game. When we would venture out to different places and whatever, people didn't understand the lifestyle of gangbanging.
Well, this is what Exhibit said, though. He said, man, that's my family tree right there. I don't go out of my way to discourage people from expressing their opinions about hip-hop, but fuck this shit. Special Eds, you out of pocket. Don't make it hard for yourself. We still active, bro.
And I think that's the comment I replied to. Like I said, this lifestyle wasn't for everyone. The way this walk of life isn't for everyone. It's hard for niggas to understand. Like, and then when you got a motherfucker who's in... again, it's competition. You get me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's competition. And for a nigga who feels like he is in a position to where he should be recognized or respected or in a bigger place, and then you get some niggas to come along and slap you off your pedestal, and now we don't even want to hear what you got to say. These niggas is kicking real shit that I want to hear. So it was one of them scenarios where I don't think a nigga thought before he spoke. You know what I'm saying? You get put in front of these cameras and you get asked questions. A lot of people aren't articulate. You know, a lot of people aren't intelligent, you know. And a lot of people in interviews, they say shit that I'm probably thinking they would go back and look upon and be like, why the fuck did I say that or put myself in that position? On the last note of that, you know, I seen Corrupt in them and Daz in them. They got on a little stream with Special Ed. And, you know, a lot of people were making the comment that he was trying to backpedal because now it was, I think he said that
Corrupt was they going
were they were brainwashed by the record labels to portray this or to
man that was easy and them just up there making music it wasn't no
but
executive.
Now but Jerry you know because I guess because he's been getting a lot of flack now we're gonna put it on the pressure of the record labels to push them to that narrative.
Well, one thing I want to say is that this is America and that brother does have freedom of speech.
Oh, definitely.
I don't think nobody mad at Special. I'm not. I don't think nobody and shit nobody. If somebody out there thinks about putting their hands on that man or something,
no, I don't think it's that.
He has the right to have his opinion. You know what I mean? He has the right to have an opinion.
Yeah,
that's what we're supposed to have.
We ain't in slap a nigga mode because of your opinions. It's just that we feel a little insulted by saying that our foundation of hip hop is the destruction of and for him to direct it at saying like your youth and the state of youth hip hop and what's happening today is because NWA was allowed to say fuck the police or NWA was allowed to say I'm straight out of Compton, you know, that's just fucking ludicrous and it sounds dumb. And you know, some niggas need to educate themselves a little more on the differences of hip hop. You know what I'm saying? Educate yourselves on the situations that a lot of us West Coast artists had to climb through to even get the respect that we get today as far as being hip hop artists, period.
Because it used to be real bad.
They didn't want us in. You get me?
And the first time I ever remember hearing this, shout out to Willie D, was on Do It Like a Geo, which was 1989. When he said, the East Coast ain't playing my song, I want to know what the hell's going on. And it was, bottom line is, in 1989, it was already known that non-New York rap was looked down upon.
And we didn't get no respect.
Period.
I mean, I used to do promo tours, and, you know, Sony was in New York. So every time it was time to re-up and do a new record, you had to go to New York. And I thought it was really a waste of time going around doing in stores and all of that. Cause I'd be like, nobody's gonna buy a Music to Drive By record in New York. We're not New York artists. So
and the line was around the corner when you went up there.
I sold records in New York, but it was totally different than when you went to a Chicago.
Right.
Yeah. You go to Warehouse in Chicago, it's 300 people outside.
George's Music Room.
You go to motherfucking San Francisco up to Tower Records, it's a line around the block in the corner. It's 1,000 people in line when we come strap dropped. You go to Cleveland, Detroit, fucking Arizona. Every time we did an in-store, it was 1,000 people waiting in line.
The Midwest was a big market for you, dog.
Oh, definitely.
The Midwest is a huge market because even to this day, shout out to the homie Big Court, but he was telling me that, you know, from the Holden Court podcast, right? He was telling me, he was like, man, I bought 8CD, man, when I was, you know, a kid, man, and I love it because, you know, he was asking about 8 coming on his show, right? And he was just telling me how highly the high esteem that he held him up there was, you know what I mean? And I try to tell 8 all the time, because 8 is Mr. I'm regular person, right? I'm like, 8, you are never just going to be a regular person to some of these people. These people grew up listening to you, dog.
Yeah, I hate that shit.
But it is what it is, dog. They love your ass, dog.
I hate that shit. But it is what it is, man. You know, it come with the fucking territory.
For sure, man. Thank you guys for tuning in this week, man. Oh, and man. We out of here. Make sure y'all go follow us at the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Where you at? 808?
808, man. Y'all know what it is. 808 on Instagram, Facebook, 8 Compton Gear.
And Soren Baker, at Soren Baker.
And make sure y'all go check. 8 has a really, not 8, I'm fucking up. Soren has a really dope show, Unique Access. I was trying to throw you a live, Soren.
Unique Access. Unique Access. Check it out on YouTube.
On YouTube, man. Really dope interviews and videos, man, with guys from yesteryear and the guys of today. It's really well-rounded, man. Go check it out.
Please do.
And we out of here.
Yeah.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.